When I first started doing this workshop, gosh, it's been, well, it was back in the years that I was doing my carpooling, and the boys go to a school that's 22 miles from the house. And so I would tell everybody that I was really highly educated, that I got my master's in carpooling, and those days are over now, and it's wonderful. In fact, somebody said the other day, said, gosh, you've got kids that drive, aren't you really nervous about it? I said, hey, I am so glad that they are driving. It's just the most wonderful thing that's happened in my life. So I have a boy that's 19 who's a sophomore at OU, and then I've got a senior boy that will graduate this year, and then I think I'm having pre-empty nest syndrome. My husband assures me that it's going to be all right, but you know, I'm still having those feelings. So anyway, they sure are sweet little kids, but anyway. We've been married 20 years, and just to give you a little background and why I'm so interested in goals, priorities, and use of time. Whenever we had gotten married, and we decided that even before we got married that probably the common denominator of all the people that we saw that were happy in their marriage was they went to church. And so we decided that when we got in church, when we got married, that we were going to get in church so we could have a happy marriage. And so the funny thing about that is our relationship at that point was with the church instead of Christ. And so when the church was up, we were up. When the church was down, we were down. But several years ago, when Mike was about, this is my older boy, when he, well, in fact, it was about 12 years ago now, when he was 7, we... Well, to back up a little bit, my husband was going to change jobs, and so when he went with this new company, well, to even back up a little bit farther than that, he was working for General Electric at the time, and he was calling on this company called Lamp Service Company. And they sold that company, and then these three brothers, actually two brothers, and then there was a third brother that had not bought into the company at that point, but they had bought this company, and they changed the name to Jack Service Company. So my husband continued to call on that account. And it was so funny because he came home one day and he said that he had been out to lunch with these fellas. He said, Debbie, this is the most unusual thing I have ever seen. He said, these guys, he said, there is something different about these guys. He said, we sat down to eat out in a restaurant, and he said, these guys prayed. He said, they actually prayed out in a public restaurant. Well, we had never done that before. In fact, when we first got married, we decided that we were going to pray before our meals. That was the most difficult thing. We would hold hands and the perspiration would run off of our hands. But we decided that we were going to do that because we just felt like that was the key to a happy marriage. But these boys, whenever we went out to eat with them the first time, actually we took them out as customers, I mean, they talked about Jesus like he was a real person. And Derry and I, this is my husband, we would look at each other and we thought, this is really unusual because we had never, I mean, we had been in church, well, for about 7 years, and we had never had anybody that we'd been around that had a relationship with Christ like they had. In fact, at that point, we started getting into a Bible study, and then we started going to conferences and started learning about how to raise our children, how to make Christ part of your marriage, which, you know, that was really unusual. We didn't know anything about that either. And so as I began to learn all these things, I began to learn about, you know, how God is interested in our time, how he's interested in, you know, the use of our time, how he's even interested in us raising our children, us responding to our husbands. You know, I thought that was really unusual that he would, you know, want me to act a certain way in regard or actually responding to my husband. So as I began to see God at work in all these areas, my life really began to change. And the common denominator of all of that change was wrapped up in the person of Jesus Christ. And it was not, and I, you know, we go to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and I'm not opposed to the church, but when our relationship is with the church instead of Christ, then we're going to have those tremendous ups and downs that you have whenever the relationship is with the church instead of on Christ or a relationship with anything else. But the thing I want you to know this morning is I'm not an authority on this subject. I've just learned a lot of things through going to different conferences and talking with different people, reading different books, and then I've incorporated a lot of this stuff into my own life. And some of it, in fact, I was sharing at Bible study the other morning. I said, I've given this thing so many times that sometimes it feels like I'm just, you know, giving the same thing over and over again. And some of the stuff I don't do. But it's a great plan, and I'm at a different stage in my life than some of you. And so some of the things that will work for you that I'll suggest, they don't work for me right now. And some of the things that I do won't work for you all. So what I want to do this morning is just go through our handout and just let God teach you and myself the things that He wants us to learn through the things that we'll talk about this morning. And all of them won't apply to each one of us. Whenever I started leading Bible study about 10 years ago now, when the Lord asked me to start leading the study, I kind of laughed and I said, not me. Not me, Lord. And He kept saying, well, I really think you need to lead Bible study. And I thought, I've just never done anything like this before. And the verse He gave me is 2 Corinthians 12:9. And really, this is a verse that's indicative of my life. And it says that my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in your weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities that the power of Christ might rest upon you. And as I took that verse as my own, I realized that I am powerless within myself. But whenever Christ gives you and me a mission, then He gives us the power to do whatever He wants to accomplish through us. And so in all of my weakness, Christ can really show up great. So I don't have to worry about being, all together or the perfect Christian or the perfect mother or, the perfect anything, because I'm not going to be perfect. And so I don't want to come across like I have all the answers. And it is a struggle for me to keep my priorities in line. I'm sure that each one of you have problems in that area because it's such an area that we can juggle so easily to fit our own needs sometimes, and we get them out of whack. So we'll just be sharing some principles. And then another verse that I thought was so great, in fact, in the area of weakness, in that 2 Corinthians 1:9, it says, we saw how powerless we were to help ourselves, but that was good. For then we put everything into the hand of God, for He alone can save us. And so if we put everything into the hand of God, He alone can save us. And we just realize how powerless we are to help ourselves. And so as we go through this, God is the one that gives us the strength to carry through all these objectives and goals and just priorities that we'll have. I think today that we as women are bombarded on every side. I have all kinds of people that I, especially women, that I've come in contact with that really do not know what their priorities are in life. And, the TV, the billboards, movies, everything that we come in contact with, the business world, tell us that to be a homemaker is not fulfilling, that we just are not with it if we're a homemaker. We're not quite as intelligent, we're not quite as creative, we're not quite as exciting if we're a homemaker. And I really hate to see the world's philosophy squeezes into its mold. In fact, in Romans 12:2 in the Phillips, it says, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold, but let God remake you so that your whole attitude of mind is changed. And as women today, we need to have a change of mind. The world is feeding us that old thing of you're unworthy, you're not good, you're not exciting, you can't be fulfilled if you are functioning in your home. And I don't believe that. I think that in order to make a home run smoothly and to have kids that are different, husbands who are satisfied, it's a full-time job to do all of that. So, I'll be sharing some things about that too. And we might hear some things we don't like to hear, but I think we need to hear the things from God instead of the things of the world. And God has a plan for each one of our lives. In John 10:10, He says that I am come that we might have life and have it more abundantly. And I think that's in the area of our home. And it can be exciting and different. It's going to be hard. And we're not going to like doing the washing, all that kind of stuff. And we'll have those feelings. But still, He's come to give us abundant life. Okay, let's just start with our outline on page 1. And we're going to talk a little bit this morning. If you've never set goals, it's really a neat thing to do. And this is getting toward the end of the year, so January is a great time to begin starting to set goals if you've never set goals. If you have set goals and you're frustrated in doing that, then the thing that we have to remember this morning is just not to worry about those things that went on in the past. We get hung up on the past so often. In fact, in Philippians 3, 13 and 14 in the Living Bible, it says, "No, dear brothers, I am still not all that I should be, but I am bringing all my energies to bear this one thing." And Paul says, "Forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead, I strain to reach the end of the race and receive the prize for which God is calling us up to heaven because of what Christ Jesus did for us." So if you failed in the past, as far as reaching goals, setting goals, and reaching your goals, and just in the area of time, then just forget about it. Just learn from that and go on, and don't let Satan make you think that you're unworthy because you didn't attain those goals. And I'll be sharing a little bit later about my first time that I set goals. That was an enlightening thing for me. It was discouraging, but it was enlightening. I think two questions we need to ask ourselves when we fail to reach our goal. First of all, where would we be if we hadn't tried at all? If we set these high goals, maybe they weren't realistic in the beginning. And we didn't reach all of them. You know, that's okay too. But if we didn't have those goals, then we wouldn't have reached any at all. We wouldn't even been straining toward that mark. And it's better to aim at something and fall a little short than aim at nothing and hit nothing. And then, are we willing to start anew if we failed in the past as far as our goals? In Lamentations 23, 22, and 23, it says that His mercies are new every morning, and if we've failed, we just need to go back, confess it, and then start off the day with God's new portion of grace. Starting with B here, since we have to be dependent upon Jesus for direction in setting goals and for help in achieving them, if our goals are not God-given goals, then it'll be hard for us to reach them. And you might just want to fill in these blanks as we go. Proverbs 16:9 in the Living says we should make plans counting on God to direct us. And then we have to, number one, desire His control and His direction. I was given this talk one time. It was just a real informal group. In fact, it was just some gals at my church that I was going to, that I'm going to now. And I had shared that we need to make these goals and that we need to desire His direction. This one girl raised her hand. She was she's probably maybe 45 or so at that point. And she said, "Well, you know, you've said all that, and, you know, that's great to set goals," she said, "but what if you're just satisfied where you are?" And I said, "Well, I guess that's all right if that's what you want. But, you know, we should always desire God's direction in our life and be not mustering up in the flesh to do things or to be better or, you know, have that legalistic approach. But we should always be wanting God's control in our life and to be better from day to day than we were, you know, the day before." And I thought, well, I really don't ever want to get to the point where I'm totally satisfied with my walk with Christ. I always want to go a little bit farther than I have in the past. And then we have to trust the Lord whenever we set goals for Him, you know, for the results to come from Him. And then we have to be totally dependent upon the Lord for His guidance and strength. Okay, our goals, page 2, should be structured around established priorities. If we have all of these goals in our life, but they don't, they're not set according to our priorities, then it'll be hard for us to reach those goals. And I don't think they'll be God-given goals unless they are established around our priorities. And then they should be personal, number two, not a list that we made to impress others. The first year that I was in Bible study with Irma and her little group, it was funny. I was the newest one in the group, and what we did every year, we would come at the first of the year, and we would go off into all the different bedrooms by ourselves. We'd pray, and we'd set our goals. I didn't even know how to set goals. You know, I thought, I mean, they sent me off to the bedroom. They had all been doing it for quite a while. And I was sitting there, I thought, well, I wonder how you do this. I mean, it was like an hour and a half or 2 hours that we sat in there, and you know, I just kind of looked around like, you know, gosh, well, she's got cute drapes, and you know. But I started setting all these goals, and I didn't really know how to set them. And whenever I set them, what I did, what we were going to do, we were going to go back and share some of our goals. I had the most grandiose goals you've ever seen in your life. Had no way of attaining those goals because they were way, way higher than what I could achieve, especially at that point. And so, you know, what I did is I was thinking, well, you know, I wonder if they would think I would look good if I had these wonderful goals. I bet you they thought, she's really going to reach those goals. But they do have to be personal, not something that someone else would do, but what fits your need. And I think this is where we get into comparison, too. If we compare ourselves and our work for the Lord with others, we're always going to come up short, always. We have to do what God calls us to do, and there might be some woman that can handle 5 jobs, which I question that, and her family. And then, you know, I might be able to only do 1 job. And an older woman might be able to do more jobs because her children are gone in the home than a younger woman who has the 5 children around her. So, you know, they're going to be different. So we need to keep that in mind. And then they have to be, our goals should be a clear mental image of what we want to accomplish. And we'll be talking about that later, too. Number 4, if I'm going too fast, you might just holler. They have to be realistic and obtainable. The year that I set those goals, I decided, I was kind of on an exercise kick, which I loved exercise, and I was playing racquetball at that time. And I decided, and I was having trouble with my feet too, which was, you know, kind of dumb. But I decided I was going to play racquetball 4 times a week. Well, you know, my feet said, no, we're not playing racquetball 4 times a week, but I was going to play racquetball. That was my goal. Well, that was really terribly unrealistic. There's no way that I can play racquetball 4 times, maybe once or twice, but they still have to be realistic. And then pursued 1 step at a time. You know, you've heard the old question asked, how do you eat an elephant? Well, you don't eat him in 1 big bite. You take 1 little bite at a time, so they have to be pursued 1 step at a time. And then they should be based on a timetable or a series of deadlines. In the area of our children, for instance, I never say, okay, boys, we are going to, or you all are going to clean your rooms. Do it whenever you want. Well, they would never want. So what I have to do to them, and not so much anymore because they're older, it's kind of hard to tell my 19-year-old who's a sophomore at college and needs to clean his room when he lives over there. But I would say, okay, now by 4 o'clock this afternoon or by tomorrow morning, I want this, this, and this done, rather than give them some long-term thing. And I do that for my own self as far as setting goals. I want to accomplish this by this particular day or next month or whatever. So it should be on a timetable or deadline. And there are values of setting goals. One is it keeps us on course. It measures our progress. Number 2, in fact, I had a real victory 1 year when I first started leading the Godly Woman. We have all these practical things that we do in it and, you know, these goals that we set for ourselves. Well, the next year I taught it, I went back and looked at my old book. And, you know, you think sometimes you're never growing. I mean, you take 2 steps or 1 step forward and 2 steps backward. And I thought, well, I'm just going to get that book out. And I don't even know what I was looking at for. But I began to read some of the applications, some of the goals that I had set, and I reached them. And that was just a real victory in my life. And so whenever we have those goals written out, then it does measure our progress. And then when we write them out, it crystallizes our thoughts, and our thoughts motivate our actions. And then number 4, whenever we write out our goals, it serves as a reminder of our objective. By the way, this is a new little notebook I have here, but my old notebook with all of my goals and all of my life in it, I lost. I couldn't believe it. It's gone. So I have to go back over and decide what I'm going to do. I thought, you know, that's like losing one of your children. I mean, it's gone. Well, you have to remember where you put your book. Might do good to make a copy of your goals. Okay, number five, whenever we write out our goals, it conserves time and energy. Okay, now I want to show you how to set goals. Have any of you ever set goals and written them out? Okay, well, let me show you. This is really a neat way of doing this. I hope I'm not... Okay, we have... Now, this is not on your handout, so you might want to copy this down. This is just an example on how to set goals. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this or not here. Okay, if we have a lifetime goal, I'm sure that y'all can't see that. For instance, okay, we'll have a lifetime goal, we'll have a long-range goal, intermediate goal, short-range, and then a now range. Okay, now maybe, for instance, our lifetime goal would be to become more like Jesus. That should be all of our, you know, part of our goal. Okay, you know, if that's our lifetime goal, that's great. But what are we going to do now to reach this lifetime goal? Okay, we're going to have, break it down a little bit, long range. Okay, which would be 5 years or longer. Okay, if we want to know him better in our mind. Now, what would be some things that we would have to do to know him better in our mind? Okay. All right. We're going to have an intermediate goal. Now, in order to reach this goal, 5 years and longer, say we want to know Christ better in our mind. What are some things that we would do outside of reading the Word to know Christ better in our mind? Okay. What are some other things? Pray. What are some other things? Okay. Okay. What about memorize Scripture? Okay. Let's use that for instance. This would be a 1 year. Okay. Let's say we want to memorize 60 verses this year. It's kind of a large amount. 60 verses. Let's break that down. Short range. Okay, you know, we're talking about eating that elephant one step at a time. Short range would be 1 month. Okay, we're going to memorize 4 verses this month, which is not too hard. You know, you look at it, you know, here we are, we're going to become like Jesus. Well, what do we do? Well, we're going to know him better in our mind. Well, how are we going to do that? Okay, for the next year, we want to memorize 60 verses. Well, let's break it down a little bit farther. We're going to memorize 1 verse per week. Now, that doesn't seem as hard. I think one of the hardest things for us to do as far as getting started memorizing Scripture is writing it down on that little card or getting it down where you can review it. So our now goal, even to break it down farther, would be to write the verse on a card. You know what the key to memorizing Scripture is?
No.
Okay. It's review, review, review. It really takes discipline to memorize Scripture. But whenever I first started memorizing Scripture, I didn't think I could do it, which I know everybody else has that same problem. They think, oh, I just can't do it. Well, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And I started out small. I had that first little packet of Beginning with Christ put out by, I think it's put out by NAB Press, or it has five little cards in there. And then on each verse, it tells a little bit about it, I think. And they're the basic verses on assurance. And when I memorized those, I reviewed those day in and day out for years and years. And then I started going through that little box that the navigators put out. It's called Topical Memory System. It's a great place to start if you haven't ever memorized Scripture. But the thing that I saw through that, the verses that I memorized toward the end in that box, I didn't review as much as I reviewed those first five. Those first five verses that I memorized, that I went over so many times, you'll never be able to take those five verses away from me, you know, unless I go crazy or something and lose my mind. But those are the verses that have stuck in my mind because I have reviewed them and reviewed them and reviewed them. So that's the key to memorizing Scripture, is just to review them over and over and over again. So this would be the way to set goals in any area that you wanted to set a goal. For instance, if you wanted to set a goal in the area of your children, say you wanted them to teach them about God, that would be a lifetime goal, or that they would walk in truth or whatever, then you would have to find practical ways to reach that goal and just break it down to that now goal. And it just makes it a lot easier. So we have to have an objective, which is a direction that I want to move. And then we have to have that goal, which would be our checkpoint, or that specific means to obtaining the objective. All right, now in this, on the little handout that I gave you on page 3, there's a sample goal outline. And you don't have to, you know, if you begin to set your goals, that's just a suggestion that I put in there so that you can go through that and maybe find some areas that you might want to set some goals. Maybe you want to set them in all. Now, all of these, I don't. Well, first of all, you've been an awful lot of goals, but there are some areas that I can't think of the word, that I concentrate on more than others. And some don't even really apply, and some do, but some don't. Do you have any questions on this, the sample goal outline? Have you ever set year verses or anything like that with your goals? Okay. So have you ever, when you set your goals, have verses to remind you of what your objective is as far as setting that goal? It's good to have a verse. Like one year, this is when I first started out learning the wives' role. I decided that in the area of my husband that I would like to be, you know, that Proverbs 31 woman. I found the verse, and it was Proverbs 31, 28b, and 29, and the verse says, and this was my goal, that my husband would think this way about me. And it said, he praises her with these words, there are many women in the world, but you are the best of them all. And so if that was my overall goal for that year, then what were going to be some ways to achieve that goal? Well, you know, I had to sit down and think, well, what are some things that really pleased my husband? And then I set goals in those particular areas. And so as I put the verses with the particular goals that I had, then it just jarred my memory. And I memorized some of those verses, some I didn't. And it just kind of helps you remind you of your objective. So you might do that in the area of your children or, you know, work or whatever. But it's just kind of a neat thing. If you don't plan time with your family, then in today's society, it's going to be hard to have time with your family. If you don't plan time with your husband, it's going to be hard to have time with your husband. In fact, before I left, my husband travels a lot, and then we, of course, go to the boys' ball games, and you know, and it's just hard for us to get alone. So, Derry played golf yesterday, so I didn't see him yesterday afternoon, and then he was going to go to our boys' fall festival last night, so I wasn't going to get to see him then before I went to Irma's house. So I told him before I got ready to leave, I said, well, the boys, both of them, in fact, my younger boy is going to go spend the night with my older boy and go to the game and all that, and so we're going to be by ourselves tonight. So I said, do you think we could go on a date tomorrow night? He said, oh, well, where are the boys? I said, well, they're going to be gone all night. And he said, oh, well, great, we'll just have a date. So we try to plan time to have those little dates. And if we don't, then we never get time. another thing that we did when the kids were real small, you know, when kids are running around, they're noisy and they're always there, and you can never talk to your husband. Well, even when they get to be teenagers, you know, they're, oh, what are you saying? So it's hard to even work in talk time. And my husband likes to have the reentry time when he comes home from work, and he likes for us to meet him at the door. Well, not particularly all of us, but he likes for somebody to at least acknowledge the fact that Daddy's home from work and we're glad to see him rather than, you know, he's home. So what we incorporated into our little deal with him coming home is we would go, this started way back when the kids were small too, and so we would go to the bedroom and we would shut the door and we'd have just a little talk time. He would tell me what happened in his day and I would tell him what had happened to mine. It was really funny because the boys, even back then, you know, they'd say, what are y'all doing in there? And they'd say, you couldn't let us in. I said, no, your dad and I are talking. And, you know, you'd look at him, and all of a sudden you would see fingers under the door. What are y'all doing in there? What are y'all doing? I said, you can't win. So, you know, we just had kind of a little time set aside just for us, and, you know, maybe 10 minutes. And the kids, you know, they were fine, too. We didn't do that when they were babies, of course, because they would have, no telling what they would have been into. But he, you know, that's something that he likes. So I set that as a goal, you know, we would try to have that time just for a few minutes when he got home. There's all kinds of goals that you could set in regard to your husband. It might be that he likes chocolate pie, and your goal would be to bake a chocolate pie on a certain day, you know, for a month. That, you know, he might faint if we did that. At least, I mean, my husband might faint if I cooked very often. But also, the thing that whenever we're talking about goals and priorities, I'm at a different stage of my life than some of you all are at, so we have to just adjust our schedule accordingly. In fact, my husband travels a lot, and I've got a boy that plays ball two nights a week. And so I have to plan, and I don't plan menus, but I have to plan to eat, period. And so, you know, that's been real difficult, and we have to adjust our schedule to that. So I don't cook a whole lot. We have to, you know, we're on the run a lot. And that'll probably all end when everybody leaves. I don't know. In the area of physical exercise, maybe you want to lose 10 pounds, you want to gain 10 pounds. Well, what are some ways that I'm going to do that? Do I need to exercise? And if I need to exercise, when am I going to do that? How am I going to do that? And who am I going to do it with? So that'd be a good area to set goals in. In menu planning, I have a great way of showing you all how to plan menus. I don't use it, but I'm going to show you all how to do it. And the reason I don't is, well, first of all, I did another class on priorities, and I had a girl come in, and she is wonderful at planning her menus. And I thought, if I could ever get to the point where I could do that, that'd be great. And, you know, sometimes I think, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't even share that if I don't do it myself. But it really is a great way of doing it. You all may know about it. I don't know. But she got up and she shared all this about how she plans all of her menus. And what she does is she sits down. She, on cards, not this large, it could be kind of hard to put them in a box, but, you know, a little 3x5 cards or your little recipe box or whatever. She sits down, and it takes time to do this, but she sits down and she plans out her menu, say, for 2 weeks. And so she writes down for 2 weeks. This is just for a week. I'd be doing good for 3 days, but this is a week. And she writes down all of the menus that she's going to have for the whole week. And so she might go to the grocery store every 2 weeks or every week or every month. You'd have to adjust that. I don't know what your schedule is. But you would sit down and look at everything that you would need for these particular meals. And then on the back of your card, first of all, she puts this on her refrigerator so everybody knows what they're going to eat. So then for each night what she does is she'll put that menu, say on Monday she's going to have this. And so she puts that menu on the front of this card. She tells where she gets the recipe, out of what cookbook, if she doesn't know the recipe. Saves a lot of time that way. She doesn't have to look it up, you know, gosh, which cookbook did I put that in? Anyway, she does this, and then she goes through this, and then she figures out everything that she's going to need for that particular meal from the grocery store for this. You know, you wouldn't have to put sugar or flour because you usually keep that on hand. And so all she has to do when she gets ready to make her grocery list, she looks at what she's going to have. She has her cards in her little file. She looks on the back of her card And then she can make her grocery list. She has everything she needs for that week or for 2 weeks. And so she's got it on hand. One thing I suggested I thought was neat, we have my husband, he's better than he was, but he used to call and he'd say, "By the way, I've invited 40 people for dinner tomorrow night." I'm thinking, 40 people for dinner? I forgot to tell you. Of course, you know, at that point, I'm going crazy. But, I mean, he has done that to me before. And so what would be neat, now, I don't know if you could plan for 40 people, but on your card, whenever you planned your meals, you might plan in two company meals for that week or for that month or whatever. And you always have something on hand for a company meal. So this takes a lot of organization to do it at first, but she does it all the time, and it works for her. And it might work for you guys, you know, if your schedule is such that you could do that.
I would hate that, though. I really would.
Oh, I would, too.
Yes.
But see, it works great for her. But, you know, back on that, though, to be flexible, I have planned meals in the past, and I would get so frustrated because my husband would call and he'd say, "Oh, I had that for lunch." And I'm thinking, I'm planning meals, you know. So, you know, to be flexible with the menu planning. And like I said, it works great for her. But her husband is home every night, and her kids are small, so they don't have a lot of activities. So it works great for her. And it might work great for you, too. Now, one thing that I and you all may know this, but one thing I've done, my kids are great entertainers, too. It's just kind of the way of life for us. They might call and say, or they might not call. Usually they don't do this to me because they, you know, I've gotten upset so many times that they, you know, kind of throw their hat in the house and then they check. But they like to have company a lot. And so, you know, I try to keep stuff on hand. I always try to bake something. I'm not talking from scratch because, you know, sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. But on Fridays, I'll always try to bake something. You know, it might be a chocolate cake and have the canned icing. But I always have something on the weekend for, you know, the kids whenever they have people over. And they, this one friend of Mike and Matt's think it's the most wonderful thing to have chocolate cake at my house. I mean, and it's a box cake and the canned icing. And he'll come over and just almost lay his face in the cake, you know. But he always knows he's going to get something, you know, at the Myers. But, you know, that's just something that, you know, kind of helps if you have company drop in a lot, you know, just to make sure that you have something on hand there all the time. Of course, you know, y'all may not eat sweets, and, you know, that wouldn't work for you either. I don't know. I'm not real into health food and that kind of stuff. I don't have time. So, anyway, I'm probably killing my kids and my husband. Do you have any questions on that part of it?
I have a question for you, not on this.
Okay.
Do you work outside the home?
No, I don't. I think it would be real difficult to not have scheduling and not have meal planning if I worked outside my home. Do you work outside your home?
Mm-hmm.
See, it would be really hard, I think.
It would be difficult. Mm-hmm. So many times you just have to run in and...
Mm-hmm.
Because there's somewhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are somewhere.
Well, you know, I don't have all the answers on that either because it's hard to plan meals with our active society. Some nights we just, you know, catch what we can and go on.
Well, what's a treat at my house is a meal in. And, you know, what would be a treat for you would be
a meal out. Mm-hmm. And it's just the other way around. Mm-hmm. In fact, my husband's real good. Like I said, he travels a lot. And we eat out entirely too much, really. But when both of the kids are gone, I plan on eating out more. I don't know.
It works.
You must be too good of a cook. Well, you know, and every situation is different. Just like, you know, every husband is different. He might like different things. So, you know, we have to adjust to our own home and to our own kids and, you know, just our own scheduling. But back on the home, I really believe that Satan is out to destroy our homes, and we're going to go on and talk about priorities. And there are God-given priorities that we need to stay within. And Satan will try to destroy us by tearing our homes up, ruining our marriages, you know, whatever he can do, in whatever area that he can succeed in. In fact, in the Living it says in 1 Peter 5:8, "Be careful. Watch out for attacks from Satan, your great enemy. He prowls around like a hungry, roaring lion, looking for some victim to tear apart." If you notice there, he said, you know, he's out to devour. He's not out to just cripple us. He's out to devour us. And I think that's true in the area of our homes. And our homes really should be an advertisement of what it's like, of the reality of Christ at work in a life. You know, we ought to have a lot of humor in the home. In fact, you know, whenever I married my husband, he's kind of a comedian anyway. I'm really somber. My true personality is being somber, and he has really brought me out of that. And he, you know, his philosophy is let's lighten up a little bit. You know, don't take yourself so seriously. So, you know, I've learned a little bit about that. But even in the area of, you know, being so dogmatic about things we want to accomplish, you know, sometimes we just need to throw it all out and go with the flow, you know, not be inflexible. But we have to have the proper priorities in our home to function properly. And let's talk about those priorities. The very first priority that we have is the Lord. And He is second to nothing. And so we need to put Him first. He has to be our first priority because we need His perspective in all areas, all other areas of our life. And if we don't put Him first, like Irma was talking about, getting that nourishment from Him and drawing strength from Him, then it'll be hard to function in our homes the way that we should. So He has to be first. Our husband should be our second priority. If you notice, our third priority is our children. Do you ever find that it's hard to have your husband the second and your children the third instead of having the children second and husband third?
I made that mistake for years, and when your children leave, you go, "Who's he?"
That's exactly right. In fact, you know, I'm just so grateful that I learned a lot of this early on. I mean, even though Mike was probably 7 when we first started learning biblical principles about, you know, husband, wife, children, you know, just relating to other, just finances, everything. You know, the Bible is applicable to all situations and all areas of life. And when we started learning that, I was really glad because we had people that said, "Hey, you know, you need to take time with your husband. You need to do this and, you know, plan times for this." You know, and I had never even thought of that. And so, you know, we all need someone to kind of help us along and to share things that they've done in their lives too, that we can incorporate in our life to make our lives better. But our husband should be second. In fact, my husband and I have talked about this a lot. You know, we started out, in fact, I got pregnant 6 months after we got married, and, you know, we wanted to have children right off. In fact, we wanted to have children right off. And there for a few years, you know, it seemed like all I was doing was changing diapers because the boys were just 19 months apart, and, you know, it was just babies there for a while. But as I began to learn that I need to put my husband before those children, it's amazing that the change of attitude that my husband had. And in fact, it's kind of funny now because we try to go off every once in a while, maybe not, we might just go to the mall and walk around by ourselves. It doesn't have to cost money. Sometimes we would save some money and go to Tulsa. You know, that's not very far down the turnpike. Spend the night there and just be with each other. One year we went to Tulsa and did our Christmas shopping and stayed at a hotel one night and came back the next day, and we had a great time. But we had to plan for that. Well, now the boys will say, "Is it about time for y'all to go off by yourselves?" You know, they kind of like to have us away too every once in a while. It's good for them to be away from them. And so they know that, you know, it's just better for us and our marriage to go off. And I think that sets an example for them whenever they get married to do that also. So, but if we don't plan those times, then we won't, you know, we won't make them. One thing that I learned too, whenever I started doing my priorities and that kind of thing, and in the area of my husband, one gal told me, she said, "What you need to do is listen to what your husband asks you to do, or, you know, whatever, before he leaves." My husband is wonderful about saying, "Would you take care of this? Would you take care of this?" Or, you know, "Would you mind sewing a button on or doing whatever?" And he asked me about 3 days in a row to sew a button on something. You know, and I just had other things going. And it really struck home with me. And it wasn't a big deal. But about the fourth day, he came in and said, "You know, I would really like to have those pants or whatever, shirt. And I said, oh, okay. Well, I didn't even, you know, I just filed that away and didn't do it. And the next day he came in, and I guess, I don't know why he was wanting to wear that particular item, but he got in there, he was sewing it on himself. It made me feel like a heel. I thought, I don't work, and I couldn't even do what he asked me to do. And what that tells him is that I don't really care about his thing. You know, I don't put him first, and it wasn't a big deal, but it really, he said, you know, it seems to me that, you know, I've asked if you wouldn't mind, and he was real nice about it. It just made me feel terrible. Like I said, it wasn't a big deal, but it was a big deal to him. So now I try to listen and do those things that he asked me to do. And it really has made a difference as far as him thinking that he's first. In the area of our children, if we don't plan things with our children, we won't do them. And so there are a lot of things that we could do to plan time with our kids. We are big advocates of if the boys have a ball game, we're going to be there. That's it. I mean, we're going to be at the ball game. Both of our boys played sports, and so, of course, we love to be there anyway, but, you know, we need to be interested in what our kids are doing. In fact, after, well, of course, Matt's a senior now, and we've gone to probably every ball game, he's, with the exception of a few, that he's ever played. And he said the other day, he said, you know, Mom, he said, one thing that has probably stood out, and I'm just going to make me cry. Anyway, he said, one thing that's really stood out in all of this stuff that you and Dad, and, it's, you know, we've bought them a lot of things. It's not what we've bought them. It's not what we have showered on them. But it's the time that we've spent with them. And he said, you know, the thing that I really appreciate about you and Dad is the fact that you were always watching me play ball. And, you know, you never know what impression you're leaving on those kids by being with them. And so if we don't plan those times, and here I am at the other end of my child rearing, Matt will be gone next year, I won't have any children at home, and I've got all kinds of time, you know, unless the Lord takes me home or something. But I've got all kinds of time to do what I want to do. And it just seems like, you know, it's been like that, and the kids have grown up and get ready to go away. So our fourth priority would be our home. And then,
I don't understand that.
Okay, the home and self, or
why home would be a fourth
priority. Okay.
I don't understand why self is not run after the Lord. I'm sorry, but that's not.
Well,
I have to be me, and feed into me. I cannot do anything for anybody.
Okay. Well, whenever I made this out, in fact, I got this. I kind of have questions about self. This came, this particular priority came out of, that's good, that's your questions, out of creative counterpart. And, you know, some people might put themselves, now whenever I say self, I'm not talking about selfish desires or selfishness, but I'm talking about just time to rest, time to do things that maybe you want to do as far as if you want to take a painting class, you know, something to, you know, maybe you want to go to school or whatever you want to do. You need to plan time somewhere in this, and it might be different for each one of us. I don't know that. Now, I think the other priorities, the Lord, the husband, the home, and then the other are going to be set. But this self, you know, it might come at different places. Now, it shouldn't come before the Lord, of course. And also, I don't think it should come in a selfish way before your husband or your children. You know, some women sit around and, I guess, watch TV and eat bonbons all the time. And I think that would be a selfish thing that they would do if they did it over their needs of their kids or, you know, husband, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not saying that that's what you meant, but it'll be different for all of you and at different times of our life, too, I think. But really, like you say, if you don't spend time for that refreshment of your own self, then it's hard for us to be of use to anybody else.
Well, we're actually working on ourselves when we do for our husbands, or we do for our children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on our characters mm-hmm. when we're putting in first.
Mm-hmm. And you notice all other means all other. That would even mean work, you know, if we work outside the home. There are some questions we might ask ourselves if we do work outside the home, and that would be, you know, is it interfering with these other priorities? And if it is, then, you know, we might need to go back and reevaluate, you know. And also, weigh the pros and cons of working outside the home. Because it should not interfere with putting the Lord first and putting our husbands and then our children. There's four pitfalls that we need to warn about regarding our priorities, and this is not on the handout. What time do we get out of here? 12? About 5 to, okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, one is we forget number one. We have an activity for God, like I said a while ago, you know, having your relationship with the church, being involved in all kinds of activity. Now, I work in the church, and I have different jobs, and I've had various jobs through the years. You know, they change periodically. You know, I might be on different committees. But if they start to cause problems in your home, if your husband has to vie for your attention when you're always at the church, then we need to be at home. Somebody needs to be at home taking care of those kiddos and doing whatever. Also, I can remember so many times that I dragged the kids to church when I really needed to be at home because I thought that that was my spiritual duty, and that was not my spiritual duty. My duty was at home when the kids needed to be at home. So, yeah, that's exactly right. You can get a bad attitude. Also, if your husbands are not active in church, and you spend all of your time at the church, then he is going to feel jealousy toward the church. Because if he's not a Christian, he's not going to understand, you know, that relationship with Christ anyway. And so, you know, it might be that you need to pull back and put him first. And, you know, we can have our own personal time with the Lord and still have time with our husbands too. And I think God honors that. Okay, scheduling and use of time. Facts about time. This came as a real shock to me because I thought that my days were probably shorter than anybody else's, but the facts are we all have the same amount of time. Now, why is it that other people get more done than we do? The second is we have all the time we need. And when we're pressured by time, it means either of the two things. We're either doing the wrong things. Now, I'm talking on a consistent basis. We're all going to have problems sometime being rushed or, you know, pressured. But I'm talking on a consistent basis. We're either doing the wrong things or we're doing the right things in the wrong way. You know, Satan not only gets us to do wrong things, but he gets us to do right things in the least effective way or in the wrong way. And there are certain reasons that we should be concerned. And first of all, God wants us to be. You know, he had a plan. Life's too short to be wasted. And then using God as our example for planning, number one under C, is time's different with God, but he still works within its framework. And then he uses a plan. One of my favorite verses of all time, and it's really encouraging to me, is Habakkuk 2:3 in the Living Bible. Whenever I get impatient or when I think that God's really not working, God always works within his own framework of time. It says, "But these things I plan won't happen right away. Slowly, steadily, surely the vision will be fulfilled. The time approaches when the vision will be fulfilled. If it seems slow, do not despair, for these things will surely come to pass. Just be patient. They will not be overdue a single day." So whenever I get so impatient thinking that God's not working, he says in his word that his will for our lives and his workings in our life will not be overdue a single day. So he does work. Habakkuk 2:3, it's right there, I think, on that sheet. Yeah, under 2. And God is prompt. Then page 7, he plans according to his love. If we could ever get to the point where we realize that God really does have our best interests at heart, I think it would help us tremendously. In Jeremiah 29:11, it says that his plans are for our good, not for evil, to give us a future and a hope. And so his plans are for us for us are for good. And then he plans according to his promises. Okay, let's get into the how-tos. If you've never, you all may have done this, and you might have found a better way of doing this, and that's great if you have. If we have a little bit of time, we might be able to share. What time do y'all have? Okay, that's what I've got, about 11:27. Great. When I first started out, in fact, I was meeting with a girl, and I told her, I said, boy, I'm just having such a terrible time trying to get all of this scheduling thing right in my mind, and I didn't know how to go about it. And she said, well, she had already been through this. And she said, okay, well, let's just sit down and from week to week for a few weeks, and let's just go through some ways of scheduling and try to organize your time. I said, oh, I think that's great. So the first day we sat down, and she said, okay, get a piece of paper. And I went, well, this is my homework for that week. She said, get a piece of paper, and this is on here, and on one piece of paper, write your priorities. And under each priority, write down everything that you're doing in that particular area. Okay? And then, on another list, write down everything that you would like to be doing. You know, you might be wanting to take a class or, you know, whatever you want to do. You might want to take a bath every day by yourself. That was a real treat when my kids were little. I'd take them to Mother's Day out, and I mean, I never got a bath in the afternoon. We couldn't afford to, we could barely afford the Mother's Day out, and I'd go home and take a bath in the middle of the day. That was the most wonderful luxury of all time. I'd think, oh, it was heaven. And so, that might be something nonsensical, but man, it was great. You know, that was a leisure thing for me. So on another list, we want to do those things that we would like to be doing under those priorities. And then I took a piece of graph paper and I put at the top Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then, you know how it has the little squares? Then down the side I would put from, so I got up at 6 o'clock, I would start at 6 and do 30-minute time slots all the way to what time I went to bed. And so I put in on that sheet of paper all of my regularly scheduled activities, Wednesday night church, Bible study Tuesday morning, church, you know, and then if I cleaned on Friday morning, then, I block off that time. Well, the thing that helped me see was I did have different slots of time that I could put some things in. Also, it showed me that I could take some things out that were really not all that important. And so it showed me that I was spending a lot of my time instead of, say, okay, doing all of my cleaning on one particular day. I had a real problem with this because I like to clean. My mother says that I'm not happy unless I hear the hum of the washing machine. But I just like to wash. I mean, I just like to wash. And so the gal said, why don't you do, instead of washing, at 12 o'clock at night and 2 o'clock here and, 3 o'clock here. And she said, why don't you set two specific times, maybe you might need to wash every day when you have little kids or whatever. But, consolidate a little bit. Of course, now we're into the football uniforms. I mean, those things have to be washed at a certain time. But instead of having all these little things that are loose ends, try to consolidate them, under a time, a little time slot. And then you might see that maybe you'll have time to work in a lunch for your husband. Well, then on that particular week, put it in there. If you don't put it in there, you won't do it. Another thing that this helped me do is whenever, and I don't do this every week. I did this one time, and then I didn't do it again. But it helped me kind of get my life organized there for a while. But now I pretty much know what I'm going to be doing each week as far as regular scheduled activity. It showed me that I could add some new things or delete or whatever. One thing that it helped me with was when people would call, if I had my regular scheduled time for my, I'm kind of a yes person. I'm getting better about it. People would ask me to do stuff, maybe as we meet each other in the hall at church. Oh, sure. Well, then I get home, I'm like, why did I do this? I've got more stuff than I can handle. And whenever I, in fact, we'll talk about that a little bit later too, but it helped me to know when I could have some extra time in there whenever I did this little scheduling. One thing that helps tremendously whenever you're scheduling is making lists. I am the biggest list maker of all time. In fact, I start Sunday night, and I'm really not rigid about this because some days I might not get anything accomplished on that list because my husband is famous for changing my plans. And, you know, I think, I've got this list, but then I just say, Lord, you know, he wants me to do this particular thing. I need to take care of it, and the rest, you know, I can do that tomorrow, whatever. I've done that lots. But on Sunday night, I start thinking toward Wednesday. And the reason I start thinking toward Wednesday is because every Wednesday, for the last 6 years, I've gone to Wyatt's cafeteria with an 85-year-old man. And we go out and we do our, you know, what we do is we do my shopping and my, not grocery shopping, but all my errands. So Sunday night, I make my list for Wednesday, put everything down that I want to accomplish. I do every bit of my errands that I can on Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday from 11 until 2. That's been a tremendous help because, you know, some things may not need to be taken care of right then. I can take care of them in, you know, between, I mean, I can let that much time lapse. And so, you know, that just organizes my time. Well, then for Monday, I might have another list. And I, you know, I have to give those lists to God all the time. You know, Lord, I didn't get that accomplished. But that's okay, too. I still have in my mind what I need to be accomplishing. Just put it on the next list. So lists do help you get yourself organized. I think page 8 is self-explanatory. We might get finished here a little bit early. I think one thing, whenever we have small children, we need to take time to rest. I know when the boys were little, some kids don't nap, so that, you know, that's a real hard deal. But both of my boys slept, and it was great. And sometimes I just let the work go because, you know, they were getting up early, and, you know, sometimes they wouldn't go to bed early. And I just felt like I needed that time. If they would lay down, I just let it all go. And then I would just sleep right there with them, not, you know, in the crib or anything, but, you know, I would just sleep, and then I would be more able to handle them in the afternoon after they got up. And when Derry got home, I was a lot more pleasant. Sometimes I lay down during the day now. You know, whenever you go and go and go, your body can only take so much, and so you need to, you know, plan time to rest. We get up early and we go to bed late, which is not necessarily good, but that's just our schedule. You know, my husband goes on a lot less sleep than I do, and he might go to bed at midnight and get up at 5. Well, I can't do that. I get up at 6. And, you know, with that kind of sleep, I have to rest during the day because my body just is not, it just doesn't handle that well. So I do plan times just to rest every once in a while. And another thing that I do plan little coffee breaks during the day. I don't drink coffee, but except every once in a while. But I'll sit down, and if I've got a book, I say, okay, I'm going to spend 15 minutes, and I'm going to read. You know, women who work, they get a 15-minute coffee break. And so why shouldn't we have a break? And even, you know, with little kiddos, you might just sit down with them and read to them for 15 minutes or play a game with them or whatever. But that just gives you time that you don't have that same old thing that you're doing all day long. I always plan time for personal hygiene. And whenever I say that, since I was 12 years old, I give myself a manicure once a week. That's it. I mean, I give myself a manicure, and that's just part of my regimen, and I feel better whenever I give myself a manicure. And that's just stuff that I plan into my own little time. And just makes me feel better. And, you know, whatever is your pleasure, then, you know, you need to plan that time in to do for yourself. Another thing that is a real hindrance to us getting things done is the phone. I hate the phone. I mean, I use it a lot, but I still hate the phone. And I really hate, my husband says you shouldn't say hate all the time, but I really hate call waiting. I really hate it. Do y'all have call waiting here?
Yeah.
Well, I would suggest, I mean, my husband thinks you ought to have it because he says he never can get through. You know, call waiting is you put it on hold and then you go to get the other phone. I think it's terribly rude. But we have it. Most everybody in Oklahoma City probably has it. But anyway, we need to control the phone and not let, in fact, this is on page 8, you control the phone, don't let it control you. If you don't have a long cord for your phone, that is the best time saver of all time. Our washroom is here, and then our kitchen is here, and then we have a little bath, and then the guest bedroom off of the kitchen. And it's not a real long, you know, big area, but still. With my long cord, I can go to the dryer, I can clean the kitchen, I can clean the bathroom, and I can go to the guest bedroom. And I used to have this little girl that would call me, and bless her heart, she would call, and she just needed somebody to talk to. She had all kinds of personal problems. But, you know, I would think, oh, she wanted to talk like 2 hours. And I would be so frustrated because I couldn't get my work done. This is B.C., before the court. And, you know, I would just fret in my spirit, and I think, oh, I just can't get anything done. Well, when I got this long cord, I could still talk on the phone and do all of those things because, you know, you can listen and do those jobs that are just secondhand to you. I could clean my kitchen. I could put wash in the dryer, and I could still listen to her. And really what she needed was someone just to be there. And so that long cord has really been a lifesaver. In fact, we have a gold phone. I can't find a gold cord, so I have a white cord and a gold phone. But that's okay. I'd rather have the white cord and have it long than have the short cord. I saw a little thing in the paper the other day I thought was really neat, cute. Old Shu, in fact, I hardly ever read the paper, but Old Shu's sitting here at the typewriter, and he's in his little office chair, and he's typing, and it says, if you're looking for a good way to manage your time better, then the little next frame says, try taking a free moment early in the day, and then the next one says, and shoot your phone. I thought, oh, how true. I'd love to shoot that phone some days. But you can make that work to your advantage. If you have that long cord. Another thing that I was talking about a while ago as far as getting yourself involved in activities, not just in church, but just any thing that you're involved in, as far as taking jobs that you wished you hadn't have taken, this has been one of the greatest things for me because it frees me up tremendously. First of all, whenever I schedule in my time, if I decide that I'm going to stay home on Friday afternoon, and I have that time scheduled in, and I'm flexible about this. You know, you don't want to be so inflexible that your schedule is a burden to you. But there have been several times that someone has called and said, could you do so-and-so for me? And if it wasn't, you know, an urgent thing, then I would just say, no, I'm sorry, I already have something planned. Well, you know, I might not have had something planned that I had to go to, but I had it planned that I was going to clean a closet that day. Or I had it planned that I was going to just, you know, be there at the house and do whatever I needed to do. That freed me up because I wasn't lying because I really did have that scheduled. And now if it was something that, you know, they needed that was, you know, I felt like that I needed to help them with, then I could change there. But whenever we know from a glance what our week is going to be like, you know, what we have planned, then we can say no whenever someone asks us to do something. Another thing that I try to do is whenever I meet someone and they say, oh, could you do this particular job or can you take care of this? I'll say, well, let me go home and check my schedule or my calendar, whatever. I may know that I don't have anything planned that day. I may not know that. Now, if it's a big job, I always like to go and ask my husband first. And, you know, say, well, what do you think about it? Do you think I ought to be involved in this? Well, you know, I'm involved in a lot of things anyway. I'll give you an illustration of that in just a minute. Another thing, it frees me up to decide if that's really what God wants me to do. I've made so many snap decisions on taking a big job, and then it's really not what God called me to do. And then I feel that great commitment to do it because I committed to it, and I'm going to go through it with it. And really, I don't think God calls us to do stuff like that. We have certain areas of expertise or talent that God calls us to, and we shouldn't be involved in everything. And so that frees me up to pray about it. It frees me up to ask my husband, and then it frees me up to decide whether I want to do that or not, just from, say, a time standpoint. What was I going to tell you? Oh, it was last year we were getting ready to do a conference like this. And I thought, well, you know, I might like to try a different conference. I might like to work a different one up. And so I thought, you know, I've been wanting to do one on children for a long time, so I thought, well, I'll just do that maybe. So I mentioned to Irma, I said, well, if I've got the time, then I'll work up a new workshop and we'll do this one on children. And so then I thought, well, maybe I ought to ask my husband about it. So I asked him. He said, no. He said, I can't believe that you would even think. He said, you know, we've got this and we've got this and we've got this. And see, I hadn't even thought of those things. And I thought, oh, gosh, I'm glad I didn't really put that in concrete because I would have been crazy. By the time the conference came, he said, you know, have you forgotten that we're having company? You know, this is another thing, company out of town coming. I thought, well, gosh, I hadn't even thought of that. And so sometimes it's good to use your husband as your answer. Sometimes I just say, no, my husband really doesn't want me to do it or whatever. And then it frees me up of all responsibility. I'm sorry, he told me I couldn't do it, you know. And maybe I didn't want to do it. And, you know, he says, that's all right, tell him that I just would rather you not do that. So that's wonderful just to use him as our little shield before we go and take on jobs that we probably shouldn't take on.
I always tell my girls, you can always say my mom and dad would kill me if I did that.
That's right. Well, along those lines, Matt came home one night and he had asked us to go somewhere and I said, no, I don't think so. And he didn't give us any static. You know, a lot of times I said, oh, Mom. He said, well, I'm glad. He said, because I just really don't want to do that. He said, I can just tell them that you don't want me to do it. See, it takes the pressure off of them. That's why we need to have boundaries for our kids. There have been lots of times that the boys said, I'm glad you didn't let me do that. At the time, they might not have liked it. But then after it was over, I'm glad that you said no on that because, you know, it happened that, you know, those kids that did that got in trouble or, you know, not bad trouble, but I mean they got in trouble or, you know, something happened. Well, give you an illustration of that. Matt wanted to go fly to Florida over Christmas break last year, between Christmas and New Year's with this friend of his that we didn't really know all that well. And you know, we immediately said, there's just no way. We don't know who you'll be staying with. We knew who you were staying with, but we didn't know him. And I said, you know, we just can't let you do that. I said, we just don't have all the details and all that. Well, it ended up that the other boys went. They had a wreck down there. No one was hurt, but they never got to where they were going. They had to fly home. It was just a disaster for all of their whole vacation, you know, over the holidays. So Matt said, boy, I'm really glad that you didn't even let me go because it saved him from all that stuff. He had basketball practice anyway, so he had to take care of his first commitment. But he would have gone. I mean, he would have thought that was great. But after it was all over, you know, it's better that he didn't go. So sometimes we, you know, we can just say no, and it's great for him. So page 9, make it a habit not to commit yourself to anything unless you look at your schedule book first. And I don't carry a big, rigid schedule book, but I just pretty much know what I'm going to do from week to week. I don't even, you know, on this little graph paper, I don't even do that anymore because I've done it for so long that I pretty well know, you know, what my schedule is. But now I do keep on my calendar, you know, every appointment that I have and, you know, even when the boys get report slips and, you know, all that kind of stuff, just as a reminder. The results of all this, it'll be easy to see if we have time to do extra things whenever we make out this schedule on our graph paper, you know, as we talked before. And then there'll be no guilt if we have to say no. We already talked about that, too. Like I said, I've just made so many decisions, you know, snap decisions that I wished I hadn't made. And if I'd have just gone home first and thought about it, you know, I mean, there would be no question that I wouldn't do that. But, you know, when they're right there face to face, oh, well, sure. And then you think, oh, how did I do that? And it helps consistency in our spiritual life whenever we organize all areas of our life. Especially in the area of that first priority of the Lord. I feel like whenever I spend time with the Lord, my day goes, now I'm not talking about free of anxiety or free of any problems that you have. It just seems like when you have the Lord first and get His perspective on the day, that it's easier to handle those things that come into your life. And I have gotten several days, you know, a word that would apply, you know, I didn't know that it applied at the time, but it would apply to the situation that I was going to find myself in during that particular day. So we need to put the Lord first. And then atmosphere at home improves because family knows what to expect and mom is happier. Do you get frustrated when your work is not done around the house? Does it affect your attitude? Well, it really does mine. In fact, we took a counseling course one time, and we had different case studies that we did, and it was called Competent Counsel by Jay Adams, and we took it so that we could help others. And the thing it helped us on is it showed us that it all applied to us. I mean, how you handle all those little pressures, and I mean, it was amazing. It was a great study. It was hard, but it was great. And one thing that I learned in there that has stuck with me all these years, that we had one case of this woman coming in, and I mean, this was all, you know, it was all pretend. And she came in, and she came to the counselor, and her problem was that she was depressed. I mean, she was just, you know, and I'm not talking about, you know, the horrible depression where you commit suicide. I guess, you know, you would if you got too far behind. I don't know. But, I mean, I felt like, I wish I could kill myself. But the counselor, the very first thing he asked, he said, "Are you behind in your work?" And she said, "Well, yeah, you know, I have a big ironing." And then she began to, you know, you had to play act on all this stuff. And she said, "Yeah, my house is a wreck, and I just don't know where to start." Well, a lot of her depression was caused because she was not being effective in her work at home. And so he said, "Okay, this week I want you to go home. I want you to do one thing." Now, this is terribly unspiritual. This is not the spiritual thing that you would tell someone to do. You know, you'd think, "Well, go home and spend time with the Lord." He said, "No, you go home and you concentrate this week on getting your ironing done. Do your ironing." And so she came back. She had her ironing done, and she felt better about it. He said, "Okay, this week I want you to go home," and he gave her another job. And it was amazing. That was the root of her problem, because she could not get herself organized in her home. And you know how you sit and you know, it gets so overwhelming that you think, I just can't do it all. You know, I'm never going to get it done. Well, just get in there, do one job. And in fact, one thing I try to do, once a month, I try to do one thing that lasts longer than a week. Like clean the closet. Clean one drawer. Do y'all have junk drawers? When they open, you know, it comes out on you. Well, my closets are that way, some. So I try to do one big thing. And it's amazing how that lifts your spirits. And it's terribly unspiritual to think, you know, you'd think that you would want to do all these great spiritual things. But sometimes we just need to do those things that we need to do.
But that is spiritual. There is an order of
yeah.
practicing and
mm-hmm.
with prayer. Mm-hmm. And it is spiritual to straighten up and organize.
Oh, I agree. Mm-hmm. It does affect our, you know, our walk with the Lord a lot of times. But, you know, whenever you would go to a counselor, you'd think, you know, if it was a Christian counselor, he'd be giving you all this advice. But, you know, sometimes we just need to do what needs to be done. And, you know, like eating that elephant, that one step at a time, or that one bite at a time, just do little by little. And it does help us. Just for today, do what we can do for today. I try to think of things that I can do tomorrow, but get done today what you can get done, and if you didn't get it done on your list, put it on to the next day. And prioritize your list that you have. What's the most important thing? The smallest thing might be the most important thing, like sewing on that button that your husband asked you to sew on. Okay, practical hints. One thing that I try to do is use tidbits of time. This is not on here. Like, whenever I was carpooling so much, it would take me 30 minutes over there and 30 minutes back. And some days, I would go over there twice. There were very few days that I had to go three times. But sometimes, it would be easier just to stay over there. I gave my life to their school there for a while. Which that was fine because we, you know, we committed to do that in the beginning when we were thrilled with the school, we were thrilled with the results, so we'd do it all. I would go if I had to sit over there all day long. But I would take my quiet time stuff, I would take cross stitch, I would, you know, do all of these things, and then so when I was sitting waiting for the boys, then I could make use of that time. And so I always had something that I could do to where I would feel. And sometimes I would plan to go over there. In fact, one day I decided, the phone was ringing so much, I thought, I'm going over there an hour early, and I'm going to sit out in the parking lot and just sit. Well, I thought I was being so smart when it was hot, and I got a headache. I was so sick when I got home. I thought, never again. But, you know, sometimes I would just plan to go over there and sit, or maybe just go walk around Target, you know, whatever. So, you know, I try to do two things at once. Whenever I am ironing a lot, I pray for the boys. Or I pray for my husband. Whenever I do Derry's shirt or the boy's shirt, you know, I don't do their long sleeve shirts anymore, but their other little shirts. You know, as I'm praying, as I'm ironing their sleeves, you know, I might pray that they would use their arms and their hands to serve the Lord. You know, around the heart part, or you know, whatever. You know, I just kind of associate things, and I would just pray that they would have a heart for God. You know. To take the humdrum out of housework, you know, I try to, you know, do stuff like that. So you can do two things at once. I have a real hard time with this because I'd like to do things a certain way and I'm kind of particular. But it's wonderful if you could get to the point where you could delegate. I'm getting better, but this is really a failure in my life because I just have a hard time delegating. But if we can teach our children young, which I didn't, you know, to do a lot of things, you know, just to delegate out a lot of that stuff, that will relieve us of and I know women who have done this that just have great success. I wish I'd have known that back then. I might not have done anything about it. I don't know. But another thing, we need to be decisive. I have a real problem with wasting time making decisions. You know, I got out of the car the other day. I thought, this is the dumbest thing. I couldn't decide if I should take my purse in or leave it out. I thought, and I'm just going to run. I thought, I'm wasting 3 minutes here trying to decide whether or not I'm going to take my purse in the store or not. I thought, this is ridiculous. Get the purse and go in. So, you know, we need to be decisive. If the task is big or overwhelming, divide and conquer. Another thing we did that was just great, this friend of mine, we just felt like both of us were just behind. And I have, it's great to have friends that you can do this with. But I said, do you think that we could spend one day at your house and then spend one day at my house and, you know, whatever you need to have done, I'll help you. And then whatever I want to have done, would you help me? And she said, I think that's a great idea. And she said, but gosh, I hate for you to see my dirt. I said, I don't care. I just need the help. And, you know, we couldn't afford a maid. And so we did that. We started in her house, and we worked from the very back bedroom, liquid golded all the way. I mean, we did everything, worked from 9 o'clock till 3:30 in the afternoon. We got everything done. That house was gorgeous. Then she came to my house about 3 weeks later. We redid all of the paper in my kitchen, you know, just that shelf job that you hate to do. And so use the buddy system, you know, get you a real good friend and just work at it. And it was amazing how fast it went, and when you have somebody to fellowship with, then, you know, it's not so boring to do.
When my kids were young, of course, cotton was, they starched everything beyond, so my three friends and I would get our ironing together and do it. We set it up in someone's house, and we'd have all these things for it. We just have a ball.
You know? Well, see, it just makes it go so much faster. That's great to do that. One way of saving some time is to get up early. You know, if you spend a lot of time, I have a friend that goes back to bed. Well, actually, she doesn't get up when her husband leaves. And she sleeps late, but she just never seems to get everything done. Well, you know, my suggestion is to get up. I never told her that because, you know, she's my really good friend, but you know, maybe we need to get up earlier. But if we're going to get up earlier, we need to go to bed earlier. Another thing is to pick up immediately after you do things. This has been a tremendous time saver for me. And I didn't even realize that I was doing it. I guess my mother taught me years ago, but I had a friend that was over one day, and she said, I understand that. Well, what happened is her little girl was there, and she was cutting out papers and stuff. And so when she got finished, I said, well, let's go get the trash can and let's pick this up, and then we'll go get something else. And her mother said, that is why you can keep your house picked up. Because she said, I never thought about that, you know, cleaning up. I mean, I guess I've just known that forever. I don't know. But see, some women don't even know that if they would clean up that little project as they go, then it wouldn't be mammoth whenever, you know, at the end of the day. So if you clean up after yourselves as you go, well, then have a special place for everything. It's easier to find everything.